Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I found a ship in an abandoned Cold War facility. Something still lives inside it. Part 1. I have always found urban exploring to be one of the most thrilling parts of my life. To enter a long-forgotten and derelict building, to see places others have abandoned, to touch the remnants of their past, it's always been a high, a reward after a hard week of work. But this last place that I've been to, I wish I hadn't gone. I'm Arthur. A buddy of mine contacted me about a place no one's ever gotten footage of. It was a neglected facility off the beaten path on the rugged Scottish coastline. He knew I couldn't say no to such an opportunity. I've always wanted to explore a Cold War era facility in the middle of nowhere. It's been a dream of mine since I was a kid. So, I did it. I grabbed my camera and planned the nearly 12-hour road trip from London to the area. I won't name it, though, because I don't want anyone else to see and experience the things I did. I want to keep that place locked away, the way it was intended to be. God, I wish I hadn't been so curious. Even now, I just want to go back and find out more. But I won't. I can't. The path leading to the facility was, to say the least, rough. Steep cliffs, howling wind, waves crashing below, deafening and relentless. Along the way, I noticed several weather-worn signs warning about private property, but those only made me more curious. Apparently, the area was under the control of some organization named the Office of Marine Integrity, a supposed NGO that protects marine life and coastal habitats. After walking around the exact coordinates and not finding anything that might lead me to an entrance, really, this piece of land didn't look like anything different from the rest of the surrounding area. I accidentally tripped over something made of metal. Upon closer inspection, there was something unnatural in the rocks. A half-camouflaged steel hatch, slightly ajar. Weird, I thought to myself. Didn't know any NGO worked in secrecy. The hatch was covered in moss, bolted but rusted through. On the hatch, there was a barely visible serial number, which in hindsight should have been the first warning sign. Still, I went ahead and, with great struggle, managed to force the door open, revealing a corroded and dark elevator shaft. At this point, my gut was screaming at me to leave, but curiosity won out. Well, that's not what I expected, I muttered, struggling to reach for my camera and turn it on. I climbed down, softly placing my feet, wary of the elevator's age. It had to be around, what, 60, 70 years old? I looked around and took a deep breath, maybe even said a quick prayer. I can't remember. Before pressing the down button. The elevator hummed to life. It was creaky, unnatural. Lights flickering above me. It's a miracle this still works, I said to the camera, eager to get to the bottom and see this place from the inside. The looks on their faces, I snickered, thinking of my soon-to-be jealous friends who would be the first to watch the entire tape. The elevator stopped abruptly. The doors slowly groaned open. The hallway ahead was dark, narrow, and filled with ankle-high, stagnant water. The air was thick with mold, salt, and rot, a combination that almost made me puke. My breathing echoed through the empty space, in a way calming me, as it wasn't completely silent. I fumbled around for my flashlight, making sure I didn't step on something I couldn't see in the water. When the light turned on, my biggest suspicion was confirmed. This wasn't an NGO facility. It was more than that. It had a secret that had only been hinted at before. The logo of the facility looked like a bit too military. The signs were too faded, too serious in tone. The whole damn hidden research center didn't raise alarms in my head. But when I turned the flashlight on, everything suddenly made sense. Welcome to Facility ESC-02. It read on the wall. Surveillance cameras hung dead. As I made my way inside across the murky water, I saw what seemed to be a reception with scattered classified documents floating around in the water and on top of the desk. The further I walked, the more the creeping unease built up in my stomach. This wasn't just an old facility. It was something worse. Something hidden, forgotten, and waiting. I placed the flashlight in my mouth and picked up a piece of paper, one that was still somewhat readable. Subject, Vessel Dweller. Response Protocol, Undertow. Local Names, The White Border. I had no idea what any of it meant, but I felt cold, like I was already too deep to turn back. The words echoed in my head as the paper shook in my hand. It had to be a prank, right? It can't be what I think it is, right? The rest was illegible. My stomach twisted. The paper trembled in my hand before dropping it. I glanced around, wondering what I had gotten myself into. There was something about this place. Something that didn't belong. A presence, maybe. I must be paranoid, I said, trying to reassure myself. The hairs on my arms stood up, and my gut tightened. I could feel it. The weight of something watching me. Waiting. But there was no one there. Just the water and the endless silence. Despite every part of my body telling me not to, I went on, eager to explore the place. That's the whole reason why I was here. I couldn't turn back without any footage. I kept the flashlight low as I walked. Every step stirred the stagnant water, sending ripples that echoed down the corridor. Due to the darkness, I couldn't really see the true size of the facility, but it was quite big, enough for a team of 20 to work there. After walking past a break room with waterlogged and decaying furniture, I reached a hallway that sloped slightly downwards. At the end of it, I saw a set of double doors, one of them hanging half off its hinges. A sound came through the opening. Soft, wet, rhythmical steps that could be attributed to a human, but the moment I paid attention to them, they disappeared. Blaming it to my cowardice, I went ahead and made my way down to the doors, watching everything from my camera screen. It calmed me, thinking I was just a viewer of events. Beyond the doors, there was a large chamber, far colder than the rest of the facility. I quickly realized it was a dry dock, or had been. Half flooded now, lit only by the faint glow of emergency lights that somewhat still worked. In the center, partially submerged, was an old fishing vessel, its hull cracked open, paint stripped, leaning on its side. There were cameras aimed at it, long dead, their lenses fogged over. A small control room sat nearby, just a dozen feet away. Inside, a computer terminal, more folders, more reports. This wasn't just a place of observation. This was a containment chamber. I started connecting the dots. Before approaching the vessel, I visited the small room to my right and picked another piece of paper up, my hand shaking with fear and the hint of excitement. Incident report. Subject: Vessel Dweller. 1979? Jesus! My eyes scanned the page, but most of the print smudged into gray swirls. But a few words stood out, enough to make my skin crawl. Vessel Operator: Daniel Fraser. Mass approaching from below. Climbed aboard. White. Tall, not human, still believed to inhabit the vessel. My hands trembled. I almost dropped the page. The last line echoed in my head. Was it still here? I turned my head slowly towards the silent bulk of the wreck in the dry dock. It loomed in the dark, and suddenly, I just wanted to run. So I did. I bolted out of the surveillance room, leaving the papers, folders, even my damn camera behind. Something shifted in the water behind me. Not loud, not a splash, but a ripple. A suggestion. Although I knew I should keep running, I slowly turned, eyes wide, my breathing interrupted by what I saw. At the edge of the dry dock next to the vessel, something was standing. Tall, still, and pale. It wasn't moving. Not really. Just watching. Stalking. Its white eyes penetrated the dark of the dock, discouraging me from flashing the light at it. Its feet disappeared in the ankle-high water, or I just couldn't see them. Its body seemed wrong, stretched, almost boneless. White like snow, skin rippling faintly like a reflection disturbed by motion. It didn't flinch. It didn't retreat. It belonged here. I did not. I stumbled back, but my feet slipped on the flooded floor, and I caught myself on the rusted edge of a filing cabinet. Still, the thing didn't move. Just followed me with its blank eyes, tilting its head with curiosity. Only when I reached the threshold of the hallway, my hand nearly on the wall to guide myself out, did it shift. I didn't see it move. I looked away for a moment, and that's when it came forward. Step. No splash, just displacement. Like it moved through the water instead of in it. A low groan echoed from the vessel, like something massive shifted its weight after a long slumber. Only then did I realize I had woken it. The ship wasn't just a resting place, but a home. And I'd crossed a line I shouldn't have. I turned and bolted, scared that the creature would be faster and more adept at running through the water than me. Still, I didn't stop. I kept going, perfectly remembering where the elevator was. Except for my movements, the facility was silent, still. For a second, I thought it wasn't coming after me. But that wasn't a good enough reason for me to stop. I saw the elevator. It was a hallway away. Water leaked steadily from the ceiling, but the ripple I heard came from something bigger. I called the elevator, but the doors took their sweet damn time to open. Those few seconds seemed like hours, so I turned around just out of instinct. It was staring at me from the end of the hallway. A silhouette of a creature that wasn't aggressive. It wasn't territorial. I disturbed its peace, and now it wants me to leave. The elevator doors croaked open, and I shakily stepped inside, not taking my eyes off the creature. It didn't move this time either. That's when I realized. I hadn't seen him move. He was capable of killing me wherever, but chose not to. The ride up was much longer than the descent. Maybe I was holding my breath the entire time. My eyes watered, either out of fear or from not blinking. I tried to piece together what I had just witnessed, but there was no rational explanation for it. I awoke something terrible. But why was it kept here? What is this place? Office of Marine Integrity, my ass. The elevator clanked to a stop. I pulled myself out, climbed up the latch, and rolled onto the wet grass, staring back at the cliffside. There was no sound from below, no pursuit. Just the wind and the waves, and the unbearable weight of knowing something still lived under that cliff. I should have left it alone. God knows it left me alone. But as I laid there on the mossy ground, soaked and shaking, one thought burned behind my eyes like a fever. It let me go. Why? Part 2. It wasn't guilt. Not really. I kept telling myself that every time I visited the spot. A few weeks had passed since I first stumbled onto the hatch. Since I ran like hell from something I couldn't explain. Since I left my camera behind. The only proof of what I saw. And yet, I kept going back. Not inside, just close enough to check whether someone else had found it. And one day, someone had. It was opened wider than before, not just ajar. Fresh boot prints in the grass, layered over my old ones. Someone else had been there. I told my friend Leo, the guy who first told me about the place. Actually, I told him everything. From the moment I set foot in the facility to the exact second I ran for my life. And I shouldn't have. He was already hooked the moment I described it. Although he didn't believe me,
He wanted to see what I saw with his own two eyes. He couldn't stop asking questions about it, and I kept ignoring him and telling him to drop it. When I told him about the fresh boot prints, he gave me a look like I just invited him to a treasure hunt. I mean, don't you feel like you left something behind? Think about the camera, the footage on it. He was right. I had been thinking about it, even though I told myself I wanted to forget. Look, even if you're scared, I'm going there this weekend. What a fucking asshole, right? He knew I wouldn't let him go alone. If something happened, I'd carry that for the rest of my life. I didn't want to go back. I just couldn't let him go alone. I knew what it looked like from the inside. I knew the creature wasn't aggressive. Not last time. Maybe if we moved carefully, stayed quiet, we could probably grab my camera and leave. A quick 5-minute adventure. I didn't want to go back. I had to. That's what I told myself anyway. We packed some food and water, in case we needed to distract it, though I doubted that would work, and drove straight towards the place of my nightmares. I entertained the thought of bringing it a gift, maybe wine, but decided against it. Leo was practically buzzing with excitement the entire drive. He had way too much energy for someone about to step into an abandoned relic possibly haunted by something that should not exist. Me? I barely said a word. I just kept watching the tree line blur past the window and hoped I wouldn't regret this more than I already did. We parked at the same spot I had weeks ago. The trail hadn't changed. The crash of waves, the howl of the wind, it all felt like deja vu in the worst way. I froze until Leo's enthusiasm shook me out of it. "Man, this place really is something," Leo whispered, crouching by the boot prints like a detective. "So these were the new prints you were talking about?" "Yeah, they're a couple days old now," I muttered. "This is insane," he said, overly joyous. "It's real. Seems like my sources are to be trusted." I didn't reply, my eyes scanning every detail near the hatch. He turned towards me with an eager grin. "You ready?" I looked at him, then back at the hole. I felt my stomach drop. I swallowed hard and adjusted my pack. "No," I said. "Let's go." Leo went first. He insisted.
"For the camera!"
he said, half joking, half firm. His boots clanged against the bottom of the elevator. "Remember," I whispered, softly dropping down into the elevator as well. "We go inside, get the camera, and leave. Nothing else." "Arthur, chill. It's gonna be fun." The elevator sprang to life as I pressed the down button, something I thought I'd never do again. The descent was silent, except for the unavoidable noises of the machinery clanking beneath us. It stopped, and with it, my breathing did too. I felt a cold chill in the air, like last time. The doors opened to the same long corridor I remembered. Tight hallways, concrete walls, pipes running along the edges like arteries. But something was different. The air was denser, tighter, and low. Pulsing hum vibrated through the floor. It felt like the facility wasn't exactly dead anymore. like it had been switched on since my last visit. Or because of it. We stepped into the water. Was it higher this time around? Or was I just imagining things? It almost reached our shins, which I couldn't help but notice. We both reached for our flashlights, turning them on in sync. Leo, get behind me, I ordered in a whispered tone. I know where to go. Don't go off wandering around. We moved slowly, the soft splashing of the water disturbing the silence between us. We reached the reception, and I couldn't dare look back at the sheets of paper. Although Leo was curious, he didn't want to fall behind. It didn't feel like returning. It felt like intruding. Some of the doors I had passed by last time were now slightly open. Not fully, just enough to suggest something had come through. I saw Leo wanting to explore, but I signaled him to stay behind me and not to go off on his own. Begrudgingly, he listened. Apart from the doors, everything was the same shape, the same layout I remembered, but none of it felt the same. The air had weight now, like the walls had exhaled after holding their breath for too long. The facility was no longer asleep. It was alive. Leo kept following behind me, humming under his breath like we were walking into an abandoned mall, and not the kind of place that left a taste like panic in the back of my throat. We finally arrived at the hallway that sloped downward. Last time, there had been two double doors at the bottom. Now, just a jagged hole in the wall, wide enough to walk through. The sound of moving water echoed through the facility, not caused by our walking, but by something else inside. Leo didn't stop. Wait, this is where it was. This is where I saw it last time. Let's be careful and stick to the plan. Leo nodded, and we stepped through the hole. There I was, back in the large chamber, a cold chill running down my spine. I looked around frantically, trying to find my camera and avoid the ship as much as I could. But Leo had other priorities. Okay, this is actually insane, he said, then took a few steps forward as I was still surveying the floor. My boots splashed in the water, then I finally saw it. My camera! I jogged over and crouched down. The casing was cracked. I flicked the power switch, just out of instinct. Nothing. Completely dead. Hope the SD card's still good. That's all I need, I whispered under my breath, then tucked it away in my backpack. Leo unfortunately found the vessel but didn't approach it. Just swept his flashlight over it like he was scared it might move if he got too close. Come on, man. I found the camera. Let's get out of here and I can show you everything. You weren't kidding about this place. His voice was quieter now. Less awe and excitement and more unease. I know, I said, standing up slowly. You good? He hesitated. Then. You remember the boot prints? He asked, not meeting my eyes. The ones you saw outside the hatch. What about them? I asked cautiously. I made them, he blurted out. I didn't go in, I swear. I just wanted to grab your attention. You weren't going to come back, and I thought... You faked it? My voice was low, but sharp with a hint of disappointment. You manipulated the scene just so I would just come back? Leo flinched. I'm sorry, but come on. You haven't stopped thinking about it. I stared deep into his eyes, trying to hold my voice back. You were obsessed, Arthur. You still are. You couldn't stop talking about this place. I had to see it for myself. I took a step towards him. You don't get it. This isn't just an old facility. There's something wrong down here. He looked away. I saw shame on his face. I had to see, and I knew you wouldn't come here unless someone gave you a reason. I didn't have time to respond. Something answered for me. It's here. A soft splash. Not ours. We both went rigid. Another splash. Slower. Deliberate. This wasn't just an object or something floating. It was moving towards us. It was coming from the far end of the dry dock. Leo whispered. What the hell is that? I already knew. My pulse slammed against my ears. From the shadows, something shifted. A slim, tall silhouette approaching through the water. It was no longer idle. It was moving, searching. I leaned in, whispering, "Back out, slowly." We both began stepping backwards through the water, careful not to splash. The silhouette moved again, not fast, but purposeful. Each step it took seemed to echo through the chamber. We reached the edge of the room. I could see the doorway we came through. But we both made the same mistake. We looked away. When we turned back, it was gone. My breath caught in my throat. I held up my hand, signaling Leo to stay still. He didn't listen. Where did it? Then we heard it. Splash. From behind us. I spun around, scared of what I was about to see. There, silhouetted in the corridor, just between us and the way out. It stood still, head tilted slightly, as if studying us. It didn't charge. It didn't speak. It just waited, like when I first visited. Leo's breathing was shallow, his light trembling in his grip. A sudden twitch in its shoulder. Then the arm moved, not fast, but like it had just remembered it could.
We can't stay here, Leo muttered. Arthur, we...
Then it lunged. A sudden lunge that was aimed at the space between us. It wanted to separate us. I looked up at it. The creature was twice my size, its eyes fixed on Leo.
Run!
I yelled, not knowing what else we could do in that situation. Leo bolted left, towards the other end of the chamber. I went right, towards the small surveillance chamber and beyond it. Behind me, I heard water crashing. Then Leo yelling my name.
Arthur!
Then a metallic sound like something big fell down. I didn't stop, my flashlight beam bouncing off walls as I turned sharp corners, slipping in the water. My backpack hit the doorframe as I kicked a door open and bursted into a room, metal shelves, papers strewn across the floor, overturned chairs. And beyond them, monitors. Dozens of them, still on and flickering. The hum I had felt earlier? It was louder here, coming from this room. I slammed the door shut behind me. I let out a breath that I had been holding in for the last minute of running. My light caught on a corkboard plastered with papers, diagrams, anatomical sketches that didn't look fully human, logs with dates stretching back to the 70s, each marked Vessel Dweller. My flashlight dimmed as I stepped closer. There were official orders, handwritten notes, small post-its, drawings, everything you could imagine. I stared at the words until they burned themselves into the back of my mind. There were binders stacked under the shelves, some sealed, some opened and wrapped by time, but still readable. The computers hummed, screens blinking with old interface windows, asking for login credentials I didn't have. I took off my bag and slumped it against the wall. My breathing finally slowed. I think I was safe here. Locked in, but safe. Whatever this place was, whoever built it, they knew what they were doing. I don't know what happened to Leo. Maybe he got out through the vent. Maybe he didn't. But I'm not leaving. Not yet. I've got food and water. I've got shelter. And I've got days, maybe weeks worth of documentation in this room alone. So, I'm going to stay. I'm reading every goddamn page in here. Every note, every entry, every name scratched out and scribbled over. Every tiny bit of detail I can to find out about this place and the creature it holds. Maybe Leo was right. I really am obsessed. When I'm done, I'll come back. I'll tell you everything. I'll bring it all to light. Part 3, Final. I made it out. I'm saying that up front because you need to know I'm not writing this as a goodbye letter from the depths of the facility. I got out. I'm fine. I guess you could say. But fuck, it was hard. I stayed in that room for days. I'm not sure how many. My phone died in the last few hours. And it's hard to measure time when you're half-starved and the only sounds are pipes ticking in the walls. But I read everything. And I mean everything. And I learned what they were really doing down there. What they were keeping in the dock. What happened in 1979. And why this place was never meant to be found again. First off, to state the obvious, the thing they called Vessel Dweller, what I will be referring to as the creature from now on, is the living organism that inhabits the facility. It doesn't survive in the air or the land like we do. For some reason, it needs a host, a vessel, quite literally, a ship or a boat to live inside. That's how it exists. Before diving into its history, I need to tell you about the Office of Marine Integrity, or as its actual classified designation states, the Thalassian Order. I found their mission statement printed on aged paper, filed beneath layers of sealed briefings and declassified transmission logs. It was simple, cold, authoritative. Identification, observation, containment of marine-bound entities and anomalous sea-based phenomena. Protection of maritime life and the coastal world from that which slips through the cracks of human understanding. According to them, no ocean is even empty. No silence is ever just silence. They called themselves the Thalassian Order. Not just a research body, something older. From what I've gathered, they've been around since the 1400s, officially recognized in 1887 through something called the Maritime Silence Accord. The treaty was never renewed, but never revoked either. That's how they still exist, between policy and myth. No government questions them anymore. They just comply. Facilities exist beneath the talls, embedded in glacial cliffs, hidden behind innocuous yet beckoning hatches. Some are active, others not. But forget the politics. I didn't stay in that room to read about treaties. I stayed to learn about it. It was first recorded in 1691, found latched inside the hull of a rotting ship off the coast. Myths spread, stories were created, then the ship vanished. It reappeared again in 1977 at the bottom of the ocean, tracked by Facility-ESC-02. They got approval to study it, but they weren't careful. The hull broke apart under testing. The creature lost its vessel. That's where the 1979 incident comes in. For the first time in around 300 years, the creature woke and surfaced. Unfortunately, the next boat it decided to occupy wasn't deserted. A fisherman washed up dead, boat missing. The order knew instantly. They retrieved the boat and kept it isolated. This time, they observed quietly, carefully. The logs said enough. Log number 9. Entity stable. No movement recorded. No damage to interior. Log number 12. Not hostile. Territorial. Avoids direct light. Log number 20. Response to loud noise. Aggressive. Vessel remains intact. Log number 25. Due to increased aggression, subject assigned protocol undertow. Log number 29. All personnel ordered to evacuate. Entity classified as contained in place. Facility marked for abandonment. That's why this place was sealed. They left, as this is the only way of keeping it contained. No more testing, no more contact. Then I appeared. And now I was stuck inside with the same thing they tried to forget. Oh, and protocol undertow? Apparently, the Order has a whole class system for threats. Undertow means the subject is unpredictable and partially active, requiring soft containment and active monitoring. It means don't touch it and pray it doesn't move. And now I had touched it. Walking through its dock, breathing the same stale air that clung to it. No more sounds outside the room. No distant bangs. Just the pipes still hissing. Still wet. My phone was dead. My limbs were weak. My rations were running out. And whatever hope I had left was rotting in my gut. One line buried in a relocation memo said, "Remaining subjects, siren net, red algae, and cosmic leech, transferred to facility ESC-01 prior to evacuation." I read it 3 times. Subjects, plural. I'd been so fixated on vessel dweller, I didn't stop to consider the rest. What else did they drag out of the sea? What else lurks beneath, waiting to be captured? It took me hours of digging after that, tearing through decaying filing cabinets, prying open wall panels. That's when I found it. A blueprint of the facility. I laid it flat, smoothing the creases with my hands. There it is. A tunnel. Thin, almost overlooked. Leading away from the flooded main access shaft Leo and I used before. Marked in fine print. Emergency exit route. authorized personnel only. I stared at it for minutes. It wasn't much. A hope buried under decades of dust and protocol. But it was something. I packed whatever I could. My flashlight, documents, a crowbar I found. Took a deep breath, cold breath, and opened up the door, stepping back into the dry dock. It was silent, cold, just like before. I made my way slowly towards the other end of the dock, where the tunnel should be. I passed a hallway where mold bloomed on the walls like bruises. A room filled with observation pods, some shattered, others still glowing faintly. Another decontamination chamber, long dead. Then I saw it. Not the creature. Not directly. But in the water at the base of the center dock window, something shifted. Slow, deliberate. A ripple that moved against the current, too smooth to be an accident. I hurried, trying to reach the tunnel as fast as I could. Eventually, I found a door. Unmarked, rusted shut, but familiar. The kind used in old submarines or pressure chambers. I turned the wheel. It groaned, fought me, but it opened. Beyond it, a descending tunnel, metal walls, bone dry. And far, far at the end, another door. I started walking. It was colder in the tunnel. The air changed with every step, drier but laced with metal. No sound except my boots against the floor and the occasional creak from above. There were no signs behind me, no signs of pursuit, but I kept checking anyways. I reached the end and entered the door, hopeful that I had finally escaped. A large chamber, unexpected. On the blueprint, this wasn't here. It was supposed to lead straight to the exit. I realized I had a smile on my face, but entering the chamber, it quickly faded. Still, the room felt safe. Wrong, but safe. The buzzing I had heard the computer room was quieter here, more faded. I flashed my light around, searching for where to go next. Ahead, one final antechamber. One door stood at the end, emergency red coated in rust nearly swallowed by the shadows around it. That has to be it, I whispered to myself, the words dry in my throat. But the air behind me had changed, heavy, warped. Something dripped. I turned and realized I hadn't closed the door. Wedged into the doorway, its slouched form hunched and its arms dragging behind it. White eyes locked on the mine, not glowing, not blinking, just watching. There was nothing I could do now. It'll come inside and it'll end me, I thought to myself. I stepped backwards towards the exit door. It stepped forward. I considered turning and running, but didn't get the chance to ponder. The creature steadied its feet for another lunge. I bolted, turning around and focusing on the antechamber. Somewhere, a loud beeping began. A long-dead security system activated by my sprint or by it. Behind me, the sounds of steel twisting, water splashing. The creature was fast, closing the distance with horrifying ease. I wasn't fast enough. That door was too far. I threw my flashlight behind me, managed to shake off my backpack without losing speed. A hiss, a pause,
Just 1 second. Enough.
I slammed into the door at the end, hands scrambling for the release handle. It fought me, the old rusted wheel refusing to budge. Behind me, something screeched. I began chasing again. I didn't have long. The wheel turned and the door cracked open. I threw my weight into it, pushing through, and spun around to drag it shut. The creature was there, close, so close. Its hand reached out, long fingers brushing the doorframe. I slammed it shut. A final clung shook the chamber. The creature's fingers didn't make it through, but I could still hear it on the other side. Breathing. I didn't move at first. Just stood there, hand on the rusted wheel, the other braced against the cold steel of the door. I stumbled back. My legs felt like hollow rods. Breathing hurt. My lungs burned, throat torn raw from the sprint and the screams I hadn't realized I made. The hallway was narrow, angled upwards. Each step felt steeper than the last. I walked. Not sure for how long. Time stopped working for me a while ago. Eventually, I found a hatch. Sunlight leaked through its rim. Real sunlight. I pushed it open. Blinding white, ocean air, silence. I collapsed just outside, half on a rock, half on rusted concrete. This was below the initial hatch I had entered through. Below the cliffside on a small space between the rocks and the ocean. I laid there, face to the sky, not crying or screaming, just breathing. There were gulls somewhere, and their laughter snapped me out of it. My limbs refused to move, every muscle pulsed with pain. I didn't take anything out, but maybe it's better like this. The facility should never be discovered again. The researchers were right to just leave it as it is. Let the dark things sink. Let them rot in the pressure, in the salt, in the forgotten blue. Eventually, I sat up. My bones protested, but the worst had passed. There was nothing in sight. No boats, no people. Just a ragged coastline, sea-slick rocks and the faint rhythm of distant waves. I don't know how long I stayed like that. Long enough to remember Leo. He would have said something stupid. Something like, "You owe me drinks for this." Or, "Next time, you pick the abandoned hellhole." And for the first time since that door creaked open, I let myself feel the ache of it all, of surviving, of remembering, of knowing no one will ever really believe what I saw. And maybe that's how it's supposed to be. Some things are better off undisturbed. I stood. The cliffside stretched above me. Behind, the water was calm. The hatch door shifted slightly in the wind, then it stilled. And I walked away. Not fast, not far. Just enough to forget the sound of it breathing.